The interest in stress is, in a sense, relatively recent. It began in 1940, or in the 30s, and then more development in the 40s. A man named Hans Selye began doing research on the relationship between stress and illness. And at first people were saying maybe about 50% of our illnesses were related to psychological or stressful things. And now the estimates are ranging 80 to 90% of our illnesses are stress-related. It's not a matter that some people are stressed and some people are not. What we're realizing is that if you're alive and if you're dealing with life, you're dealing with stress. Because for all of us, stress is defined as a situation in which we experience a demand. Any situation in which you feel like there's something being expected of you or feel under pressure in some way is a stressful situation. So we want to take a look at first what that stress is about and then some of what you can do about it. The surprising thing that has been discovered is that stress is present in both good times and bad times. In English we have the word distress, which means the negative kind of stress, but in Old English we have a word called eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, and that means good kind of stress. You know, the kind of stress you have when you're celebrating Christmas. And you know that even that can be stressful, when you're having a good time. So that even when we're celebrating or having a good time, there can be an element of stress on our system. The discovery that we've had and what we've expected is that stress, when we think of stress, we think of overload, of things expected of us, deadlines, not going to be able to do this. Am I able? What will people think of me? More is being expected of me. That has been the common understanding of stress. So some of our early research, they did stress on tax accountants. And they found as April 15th got closer and closer, the serum cholesterol count of the tax accountants kept going up. So that their body was responding to the stress they were feeling. When you think of stress, what do you think of? What kinds of situations come to your mind as stressful?
Too much to do, not enough time.
Too much to do, not enough time, yes.
Deadlines,
pressure.
High expectations.
High expectations of yourself.
Yeah, or other people.
Okay.
Crowded living.
Ah, crowded living, yes. The research is showing that that's definitely...
Traffic.
Traffic, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Health problems, yes. Beginning to experience incapacity in different ways. Okay, that children are increasingly lacking respect for parents. So parents may be... Oh, teachers, yes. Okay, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I would agree with that.
From experience. Now, one of the interesting things that's coming out of research is that often it's the little irritations that are more stressful than major crises. Now that... Major crises, I think, in some range, major crises, can be more stressful. But the problem in studying stress is really trying to figure out why is one thing stressful to one person and not to another. Two people can go through the same experience, one no sweat, the other person really stressed out by it. And so the difficulty is deciding just what is stress and what is it all about. The studies were made of the people at Cape Canaveral during the early launchings of the first the moon space shot. And they had an interesting kind of stress, heavy deadlines, tremendous pressures on them to produce quickly. And yet they knew also that as soon as they fulfilled their contracts and did well, they would very likely lose their jobs, that the project would be over. Now the interesting thing that happened is that some of them had a great deal of stress before the project was over and showed signs of physical symptoms, swelling, ulcers, colitis, other kinds of stress signals. And others didn't experience the stress and the symptoms until after the project was over and they had lost their job. So that didn't make sense in terms of some people were threatened by one thing and some people were threatened by another. What we're discovering then is that a great deal of stress is related to who we are and what we think and how we see things. Now a real discovery is in relation to the next one, underload. What we found is that, for instance, in counseling, I have people often come in after vacation for counseling because vacation was so stressful. Why? Because I didn't have anything to do. What do we find with retirement? That oftentimes people may become sick a year or so after retirement. Because all of a sudden all the meaningful things that they did in their life were no longer there. And they're sitting around wondering what to do. Now, I talk to a lot of people that retire who have solved that problem beautifully. They say, when am I going to get a free moment? But for many, they experience an underload. Have you ever had a day off, nothing to do, and you think, oh, I can't wait? And then you sit around, and pretty soon you start getting fidgety, and pretty soon you've got yourself busy doing all kinds of things. And it's like you couldn't really take the day off. That there was a stress in the underload. Now that, I think, helps us understand also how much our mind and our attitude plays. Because it isn't just the demand and pressure from outside of us. It is that we, from within ourselves, have a certain sense of what we ought to be doing or have to be doing. And when we aren't doing that, then we feel stressed and begin to stress ourselves. Notice here then that when we experience too much demand, the feeling in us is one of powerlessness. And when you feel powerless, what do you feel like you need to do? What's that?
Chuck the whole thing.
Okay, there you go. When you feel like you don't have enough power, besides chucking the whole thing, what do you tend to do?
I think you get tired for one thing.
Okay. You feel fatigued?
Maybe you get a little angry.
Okay, some anger mixed in with it? Why is all this being expected of me?
I get worried.
Spend a lot of time, the mind starts spinning. In a lot of ways, we go into overdrive.
Try harder.
Try harder.
And it causes other symptoms to erupt.
Yes. We begin to feel like we have to be more than we are. And when you feel like you have to be more than you are, then you start straining. And you begin to hold yourself as though you could be more than you were. Hold yourself up or down or in or out. We begin to try to hold ourselves up to what we think we have to be and strain and stretch and strive in an anxious way, trying to be what we think we have to be. It's that straining, striving anxiety that begins to take its toll and begins to put an overload on our system. Now, when there is an underload, when all of a sudden we have much more capacity than we find any use for or demand for, then we experience purposelessness. Somehow I don't feel like I'm anybody. I'm a nobody. Nobody needs me. My life doesn't have meaning. I don't feel a sense of purpose. And then I feel a different kind of anxiety. It's almost like I have to deny my capacities or hold myself in. And here I am all dressed up, ready to go, and no place to go. And that has a tremendous stress also and begins to take its toll. Now, optimal stress, as I said, we're not going to do away with stress in life. So what is optimal stress? Have you ever had an experience where there was a real challenging situation and you felt you could do it and do it well? A job that you knew how to do, what's that like?
Great feeling.
Yeah. It's like, wow. And you feel, it's like you let go. Like it's okay to be you. You don't have to be more than you are. You don't have to be less than you are. It's just okay to be who you are and do the job and let yourself out and go. That's what optimal stress is. And there are those moments when we discover that kind of click. One of the ways I discovered it, I was a pastor in a parish for 7 years, and sometimes sermons did not come easy. And I would find sometimes when I would sit down at the desk to write a sermon, my mind just wouldn't click, and it was like, you know, mush, trying to get the sermon to come. And the harder I would try, the more it got fuzzy and nothing was clear. And sometimes I would arrive even at Sunday morning feeling like I had put something together and it still wasn't clicking and really feeling good. And I would take a shower. And in the shower, all of a sudden, I would relax and I would sometimes rewrite a whole new sermon. And in a matter of a couple minutes in the shower, where I was relaxed and clear, my mind was working, clicking on all cylinders, and I could just put things together like this. I could see it all and put it together. And such a great feeling. But where was that feeling when I was feeling under pressure? That's what we do to ourselves when we try to be more than we are, is we deaden our capacities, our senses, our abilities, and are not able to function as fully and clearly as we can when we are able to flow with and move with a situation. So, when you're experiencing stress, what are some of the ways you know that? What are some signals?
Headaches,
okay?
Stomach.
This one over here?
Break pencils.
Oh, break pencils, okay. And stomach ache and?
Acne.
Acne, okay. Yeah, sleeping?
Or not sleeping.
Or yeah, not being able to get to sleep. That's a good one.
Waking up in the middle of the night and starting to grind things out.
Yeah, toss and turn.
Get back to sleep.
Waking up in the middle of the night, yes. I'm repeating these so I can get them into the tape. Some others.
Heart irregularities or palpitations or something like that.
Okay. Experiencing your heart racing.
Difficulty in concentrating on anything. Mind is
something. Yeah. Hard to focus the mind. Hard to concentrate.
Irritability.
Yes. Irritability. Okay. Yeah. Little things that just want to blow. Okay. Yeah. This whole range. Fatigue. Different kinds of physical symptoms, sometimes difficult to focus your eyes. Sometimes your senses shut down, where you just don't hear people, or it's hard to speak. Different ways then. Various aches in our body. Sometimes we wake up feeling like we've been working all night. Part of the reason I think for that is that when you go to bed with a lot of demands and unfinished issues, your dreaming tries to work it out, but as hard as it tries, it isn't able to do it, and you end up feeling all the frustration in your body because your dreaming wasn't able to resolve everything. Okay, these are some of the symptoms that that happen. Now, let's take a look at the stages of stress. First, there are the stressors. And we've said anything that places a demand on us, but also mentioned other things, crowdedness, the heat of the room, being out in the wind, weather sometimes, coldness. These are also kinds of stressors. However, what we've come to realize is that the filters, or the way we look at a situation, our perspective, to a great extent determines how we experience stress. And this is why each of us have different filters, therefore we're going to experience a situation differently. And Ricky's going to talk a little more about that. After we perceive the stress in a situation, then we respond. And we respond with three basic ways. Fight, flight, and the third one I'm going to call flex. Essentially, we respond by either fighting back, and that means gearing up in some way to put our force against the other, whatever the force is, whatever the demand is. And we fight the demand, either to fight to meet it or to deny it. Or we turn and flee. We shut down and try to deal with it passively. We deaden ourselves. Or we discover the third alternative. And this one we are not much in touch with, but in many ways we need to learn. It's a biblical one. Jesus said, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, do what? Go two. Now that's weird. Someone forces you to go 1 mile, go two. That takes learning how to have enough of a perspective in a situation to be able to flow with something, to move with it, rather than just fight or flee. And that's a powerful dynamic that we can discover. Ricky, need a couple more up here. If you could save me one.
I can save you one. Thank you lots.
Okay. What I sense makes the difference in how we deal with stress in life is basically how we feel about ourselves. That the issue becomes whether or not we feel like we're enough. If we don't feel like we're enough, we base our life and the way we live our life on a fear that we're not enough, a fear that we're nobody. Now that fear is a basic temptation. And it's described in the temptations of Jesus. The devil comes to Jesus and says, if you are the Son of God, do something to prove it. In other words, the devil comes to you and says, if you are somebody, prove it. And it's out of the effort to try to prove that we're somebody and the results of that that comes the major source of stress in life. Now, what do I mean by that? Jesus says it's harder for the rich man to enter the kingdom of God for the camel than the camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Why? Because the rich man has a somebody that's working, and it's hard for him to let go of it. He also says, do not be anxious. And he says, which of you, by being anxious, can add one cubit to your span of life? Which of you, by being anxious, can make yourself more than you are? Remember, we were talking about trying to do that. Okay. What we do is, out of our fear of being nobody, we try to create a somebody. And that somebody, then, is our effort to prove ourselves. And the result of that fear, you can see on the left-hand side down at the bottom. When we are anxious about who we are, we experience anxious tension, we narrowed our focus, our mind chatters, we strain and are off balance, all these things we've been describing. We hang on to resentments and guilt. We become bound to addictions and try in an attempt to deal with our anxiety. The basic feeling is anxiety. Secondly, our way of looking at the world, our perspective in the world, is we feel like nothing is ever enough. We feel the need to either exclude or control things. And we tend to see persons as means rather than as valued beings. And we tend to always see the negative side of things in some way, or to fear the negative side. Then our actions are attempts to control and manipulate others around us in the situation in order to support the somebody that we are trying to create. And so we seek win-lose solutions, we escalate conflicts, we have self-centered goals, and our basic orientation, although we don't recognize it, is a hostility, a need to tear other things down in some way to build ourselves up. And this can be very hidden from ourselves. Very subtle, so that we don't often recognize these aspects. Jesus says, either you build your house on the sand or the rock. The sand is fear, and out of that fear comes our sin. But out of faith comes then the gifts of peace, hope, and love. And I want to go into this more in some later sessions as to what it means to live out of this faith and this faith orientation. But I would like to do one thing with you before I ask Ricky to take over. In order to make this shift from fear to faith, we need to open up to the gift of God and sense that God finally is the one that makes us enough. And then as we discover what it means to be enough, we can discover what it means to be relaxed and open to what's happening. Now, let's see. I'd like to experiment with this. Would you be willing to experiment? What I'd like to have you do is find a partner and spread out around the room to all the spaces and just stand facing a partner. And we're going to do a little experiment. Now, if you'd rather not do it, just sit and watch. If you'd like to do that, you can do that too. But you might discover something if you experiment. This time, let's have A's. I want you to stand again the same way. And this time, have a good full breath of air. Feel your feet touch the floor. Feel your legs under you. Let yourself relax and let yourself be able to stand. But relax and breathe. And now, B's, begin to push. And just gently at first and increase and see how much it takes to push over. Okay, A's, feel your connection with the floor. That's it. Just relax and stand. Now, B's, begin to push. Okay? Just kind of push a number of times, gently at first, and then increase. Okay. Now let's switch. Now B, stand. Again, feel your feet on the floor, feel your legs, kind of flex your knees. Let yourself breathe and relax, and let yourself stand up. Now, gently push, lightly at first, and then increase the intensity. Just a little pat at first, and then just a little push, and then take your hands off, and then just kind of gently push several times. That the more tense you were, the less balance you had. Yeah. Okay, now that's what happens, is that often the harder we try, the more we dissipate our strength. And when we discover what it means to be relaxed and alert and clear, we're able to move with something, and we have more strength than when we are trying hard to be strong. Now, an experiment was done with some runners where they took a group of runners and had them run the 400-yard dash, and they gave them a big pep talk, and they said, really go out there and drive. You give it all you've got. And they ran it that first day. The second day, they said, now go out and let yourself go. Just let yourself run. And a good number of them ran it faster the second day. Now, a lot of our stress is related to our striving, our trying so hard to make ourselves strong, rather than discovering. Okay, take your seats.
But that's right, the idea is there, and that was, I mean, it's an actual experiment that they did, that they found that the runners who just kind of let themselves run were more effective and actually ran faster than those who were told to get out there and do your best. So, once you have dealt and identified some of the things that stress you in your life, whether it's too much to be done in too short a time, whether it's overload, whether it's underload, or whatever it is, what do you do? What are some of the strategies that you can use to manage your stress? That's right. That's one of the first things you can do is you can alter your situation. A lot of people find that when they move, there is some stress involved in moving, but they also escape from some things that they have had, you know, that they kind of inherited over the years. They started out in PTA 12 years ago. Now all their kids are out of college, but they're still on some committee that they started in at that time, and they have never quite been able to say no to. So one of the things you certainly can do is you can alter your situation. You can evaluate the situation and see what things do I want to do, what are my priorities, and you can alter the situation. There's also the classic one of the little boy who experienced a lot of stress because on his way to school every day there was this great big Doberman Pinscher that stood outside of somebody's house. Maybe today we could talk about it as a pit bull, but anyway, it was a dog that scared him, and he found that by the time he got to school, he was really in knots. And so what did he do? He altered his situation. He went another block around. It took him an extra block to get there, but he arrived in a much more relaxed form than he had than when he tried to walk slowly past the German Shepherd or the Doberman Pinscher on the way to school.
Let me throw in just a short one here. And that is, a doctor told a fellow that he was going to have another heart attack if he didn't deal with his stress. So he altered his situation. He quit his job, divorced his wife, left his family, and moved to Hawaii. Now, that's not quite what we have in mind. There are other things you can change besides totally changing your situation.
That's right. One of the things that, industry, unions, and so forth have certainly tried to build into the workday is some breaks. Now, we have a coffee break. We have a lunch break. We have some of those things. They didn't used to have 50, 60 years ago. They didn't build those into the workday. Do you build it into your workday, and do you take it seriously? It's important for you to release some of the tension that comes in your workday so that you can relax and use that time to relax. some of us good Northern Europeans have a habit of thinking you've always got to be work, 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 that devil finds work for idle hands and that sort of thing. But it is important to take some time each day during each year to take a break. I don't need to tell you that. That's why most of you are up here, because this is different than home. You may be busy from 7 o'clock in the morning until 10:30 at night, but it's a different kind of busyness than what most of you experience at home. The other night when Pastor Johnson was talking about the image of the tree, Jeremiah's tree, I tuned into it because one of my favorite stories for dealing with stress in my own life has to do with my image of a tree. Kind of looked out one day when I was under a lot of pressure at one time and thought, you know, there is nothing in God's creation that doesn't have some time when it's dormant. You look out at an apple tree, and if you're from the Midwest, you know what an apple tree looks like in January. It looks dead. It looks exactly, I mean, one that you know is going to burst into bloom before too long, but in January it looks dead. But before that tree starts to blossom or bring forth leaves or fruit, the first thing it has to do is fill its own roots. And so when those spring rains come, those roots go down. Nobody on the outside can see it, but that tree is being fed from the inside. If it gets that nurturing, then the blossoms come and the leaves come and the fruit come, and it's not a thrust, it's not a striving. It just comes. And if those roots don't get filled, you get a drought year. You don't get much blossoms, you don't get much in the way of leaves, and you don't get much in the way of fruit. For me, that's a good image for all of us. We need to take some real breaks to feed ourselves. It's a time to deal with the Word, time to do some quieting down, time to do some spiritual refreshment, so that we too are ready to let go and produce when it's time to do that. Another way to deal with stress, another way to manage your stress, is to limit the amount of change that you have coming into your life. Sometimes we can't limit it all, but we can sometimes structure some of the amounts of change. You hear about people who move, somebody who's recently been widowed. They not only have lost a life partner, but then they move away to California to be with their kids and move into a little room or a small apartment which is no longer really theirs, away from their friends, away from their support system. So they have made all kinds of changes in their life. That's a highly stressful situation. Before I was in back to teaching, about 6 years ago, I sold real estate for a long time till the bottom fell out of the real estate market and we had 3 kids in college. But I dealt with a lot of people who had lost spouses, who had been widowed. And insofar as it was possible, I suggested that they not sell their home or move until it had been at least a year. Let some of those changes build into your system rather than make changes one right after another that your whole system has to adjust to. A fourth way of managing your stress or stress potential, of course, has to do with managing your time. And that deals, again, with how you build in some times for some breaks, build in some times for variation, build in appropriate expectations of what can be done in a certain period of time. The fifth thing has to do with altering your perspective. What do you see that you expect for yourself? How can you change this little message in your head about what is expected of you at any given time? One of the things psychologists have discovered is that in every family, there are kind of hidden, sometimes not so hidden, expectations of what you are supposed to do. I bet somebody over here found that in her family, you better hurry up. Get it done. Hurry up was the kind of thing that ran through that family. No matter what you're doing, hurry up. Get it done faster, faster, faster. never hurry up fast enough, because when you get this amount done, there's always more to be done, and if you'd started earlier, you could have gotten a whole bunch more done. Hurry up was the message that that particular family passed on to the children in that family, or at least to some of the children in the family. Sometimes you think the youngest in the family didn't get that message, but usually the older ones do. Another one of the, well, what we call drivers, are the, again, one of these messages that are kind of built into some families, and many of them are built into all families. Another one is be perfect. Whatever is worth doing well. Do it perfectly. A lot of stress involved in that. A lot of good intention involved in that. But can be extremely negative at sometimes. I found in my own family that that was pretty much my how I tried to do things. If I was going to do it, I wanted to do it just perfectly. I had a grandfather who was pretty relaxed, and I went to live with my grandparents after my parents were divorced. And all of a sudden, my grandfather would find I was setting out on a project, something I was going to do, whether it was a school project, or I was into making puppets at one time, or whatever. And I was getting nothing done. I was just kind of like I was stopped in my tracks. So what's the matter? I said, well, I've got this to do, and if I do that, I've got to do this, and then I've got to do this. And I had so many things to do, I couldn't even get started. And he'd puff on his pipe, and he'd say, well, I don't know, Patsy, whatever's worth doing is worth doing badly. He said, you know, if you do it first and it's not right, you go back and you fix it. But if it's worth doing, get going. Don't sit around waiting for it to get done. Tremendously freeing kind of thing. Yeah, so I was talking to Debbie Cornelius today. This last year I taught language arts in the junior high school. First time I've done that without a curriculum. I was fine in a couple of other subject matters that I had to teach, but language arts, okay, I'll do it. And I tried very hard to do it well. But I knew that by the end of the year, I was not satisfied with it. Next year, I'm going to do it, and it's going to be much, much better. But I stressed myself with it. I know I did. But I also knew that I'm going to be able to do this a different way at a different time. But it was important to do it. Otherwise, I would have ended up with nothing. It's important to know that whatever is worth doing needs to be done. Get at it. Don't sit around and not do it. Even if it's done badly, it's better than nothing. How about your family? Have you ever run across anybody in your family who told you that, hey man, you got to be strong. Can't show any weakness. That's a tremendously stressful message. You know, all the little boys who can't cry. We don't have so many of them today. But, you know, 15, 20 years ago, we had lots of them. And we still have some around. Can't cry. Can't show any weakness. That's another message there. To be strong.
That may be attractive for women.
Pardon?
That may be attractive for women.
Yeah, yeah. Women, you always have to be attractive. Everything has to be just so. So it's a similar message. And increasingly for women, it's also you have to be strong. Today's society, more and more women, you have to be strong. Another driver that's very stressful, an inner perspective, has to do with be responsible. Okay, John, you know, you are the one that has to make sure everything gets done. John, who is now 5. You get it all done. Or how about your mama's little boy? Lots of single parent families where the oldest child, boy or girl, gets to be the one that has to put things together. You know, you're going to take part of daddy in this family now. Strong sense that they must be responsible for making everything work. Carry that on into your adult life. One of the things you do is what you do telling other people is that you are not capable. I have to be the one that makes it go together. It's a tremendously stress-producing kind of thing. We do that in our family. We told our kids that they have to be responsible. They and I are very responsible. We found, we went to Mexico about 9 years ago, and our oldest had been in college for 2 years. And at spring vacation, we took him with us. We all went down to Mexico City. We arrived at about 11:30 at night, all six of us. Our reservations in the hotel were not the ones that we had thought we had made. We were split up into two different hotels. I wouldn't recommend them to anybody who's, unless they're going to go sixth class, and we thought we were going maybe second. And as I say, it was very late at night. So Dale and the boys went off to one hotel, and my daughter and I stayed in another one just for that night because we were all pretty tired. Next morning, our oldest son got up, 2 years on his own, and went off to college doing lots of things for himself. And he went out, did some exploring around, found us a very nice hotel, overlooking the park, had a swimming pool on the roof, and he figured out the costs. And, you know, if we took one of these other two rooms and this one, cost would be about the same, but we could all use the pool, we could shift back and forth. He had it all worked out very nicely. Came back, told us, we thought, gee, that's great, we'll do it. Isn't that wonderful, Arnie? He's so responsible. And he was. But then Dale and I and our responsibility bag took over, and we said, okay, well, we can do this today, and we're going to go see this place, and we're going to see this place. We're only going to be here for 3 days, and we want to see all that we're going to see. By the second day, we'd asked Arnie and the rest of the kids, well, what do you want to do? Whatever you say. You know, we had taken away their self-concept of being able to do anything. Here, Arnie had demonstrated a wonderful ability to be responsible, to do a number of things. But by our taking it all over, we were being super responsible, but in a sense we were saying, you're not capable. We'll do it for you. And we were, in that sense, kind of raising or teaching them how to let other people make their decisions for them. Be responsible is a strong driver in our family, for us. The sixth driver I want to talk about that we all deal with, and let me check my time, okay, is the one that we have to please everybody. How many of you were raised in a family where, you know, if you are going to be anybody, if you are going to be somebody, if you're going to be a success, according to your parents' definition, you've got to make sure everybody's happy. Any of you ever try to please everybody? Any of you ever succeed in pleasing everybody? Yeah. The essence of these particular drivers, the hurry up, the be strong, the be responsible, I forgot to mention the try hard. That's another one. Try hard. Whatever you're doing, try hard. Try harder. It doesn't say anything about do it, about succeed. It says try. And lots of us get tied up into the idea that we have to try and never quite make it. All of these drivers, and I guess that's what that sentence I started out a few moments ago, the hurry up, I think Dale's going to write these up for me. Hurry up, the be perfect, be strong, try hard, be responsible, please everyone. You can't do them. You cannot do them. There is always more to be done if you're going to hurry up. There is always more to you. You could have been a little more perfect. You could have gotten something done a little bit better. You could have been stronger or more attractive. You could have tried harder. You could have been more responsible, done more things.
Right, clear.
I had a roommate in college who graduated from Carleton, which was even in my day a very good college, very strong academic standards. And she graduated summa cum laude. She was editor of the yearbook. She was May Princess. She had a date every Saturday night. She was engaged by the end of our senior year. I mean, you name it, she somehow or another had it all together. But people said about Nancy, you know, Nancy, I can't understand. She must be just one of those quick learners because she never seems to study. And I roomed with her. And I said, Nancy studies well. She uses her time very well. and she'd study late at night, but she never had that look like she was really trying her. Or, you know, you've seen them all, when you remember back to college days or something, you remember those people who were in the study room or come into the TV room or something and say, oh, I've got all these tests tomorrow, I've got 3 papers due by Friday. So, great for math, they're trying hard, they're working so hard, getting nothing done. In Nancy's particular case, she had a father who was an attorney in Western Illinois. She had a sister who was very accomplished. In their family, they did it. Nobody ever said anything about trying. You do it, then you've got strokes for having done it. That's wonderful. You could go on and do something else. She never dealt with the try hard. And she was bright, there's no question. But she also organized her life and never had to get her strokes for attention from looking like she was smart. Once you know or can recognize some of these drivers in your life, what do you do about them? You know, it's one thing to look at the diagnosis, but what do you prescribe, or what do we prescribe for for the particular problem?
About 2 minutes.
Okay.
To wrap it up, so,
All right. One of the things when you hear those messages in your head. And any of you recognize any of this? If you recognize any of these drivers from your home, from your own self-talk, just raise your hand. Sure, okay. When you hear those messages in your head, you can give yourself an allower over here. It says, you hear the hurry up, hurry up. It says, enjoy getting there. You know, like when you're going to hurry up and get in that car because you have to get in the car and you have to get up to the boat and you have to be there by 10 o'clock so you can catch the ferry up to Holding it, blah, 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 and so forth. One of the things we tried to do this year is start the vacation the moment we leave home so that we're enjoying our way up as well as the time we're here. So enjoy getting there, not just the hurry up. Be strong. It's okay to show weakness. Paul talked about my strength is made perfect in weakness. Hey, you're not, you know, Mr. Concrete or Mrs. Steel. You are a person, and there are times and places where you're going to be weak, and it's okay to show weakness. That may be the time when you become most attractive and most connected to other people. Try hard, easy does it. Succeed. Don't just try, do what you can. And get the strokes for doing what you do, rather than always feeling you have to keep trying. Be perfect. Anything, I've already given you the one, anything worth doing is worth doing badly, but get on with your life. Do it. Or sometimes, you know, if you've got to do it well, but it doesn't have to be perfect. Only Jesus Christ was perfect. Nobody else in history ever has been.
If you have a user-friendly computer, okay, but there are some times when you can really make a big fool.
Yeah, that's why we got a Macintosh. It's very friendly. Yeah, you're right. So forth. But then you can go back. Well, I mean, you don't have to give yourself a, you know, hey, you didn't fail because you put in the, you know, the wrong directions or you misspelled a word or something like that. So there's different ways to treat yourself at that point.
And a surgeon react to this. You know, a surgeon says, hey, I can't make any mistakes. And what we finally arrived at, have you ever tried to walk a plank and you look at it and you try to make sure you don't wobble and you know, you go like this and finally you fall off? And if you relax and not focus on not making a mistake and let yourself do it, you can walk it. And so we began to realize that by trying not to make a mistake, he tended to make mistakes. Whereas when he let go and said, I'm going to do it my best, and that's going to be good enough, because that's all I can do, then he let himself go. So that's what is meant there.
Instead of please everyone is the way I usually put this, instead of please me, that's kind of mama saying please me. But please everyone, please yourself. Look at the data that you have. What's the appropriate thing to do? Using your best judgment for a given situation. What's the best thing to do? And you may in the process not please a few people. But even when you try to please them all, you can't do that either. So do the best with data you have. For be responsible, instead of being responsible, be responsive. Allow other people to do the best that they can in a given situation. Let them use their talents, stroke them for the abilities they have. Be responsive to them. Okay, did I miss one here?
No.
Okay, good. All right, that's... those are things, those have to do with inner perspectives and ways you can alter your self-talk to decrease the stress on you. Now that I've demonstrated, hurry up.
Right, yeah, it is time to leave. So probably the main theme is, if you are experiencing stress, begin to take a look at inside. How are you creating that stress by the way in which you are viewing the situation? What are you telling yourself you have to do? And how do you experience that have to? And for me, this one was, I don't have to be responsible for people in order to prove who I am. I can, because of who I am by the grace of God, be responsive to people. And that has a whole different feel.